Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
There's a story in the Tribune over the weekend. Aurora shooter should not have had a gun due to felony conviction, but state law failed to stop him. And this is what the author of the article, this is Megan Kripo's story, says. State police regularly check the FOID database to ensure people with cards remain eligible to own a gun. When they find that someone's FOID should be removed, that is, you no longer have the right to own a gun, they send a notice instructing that person to give the card back to local police and turn over their weapons to a law enforcement agency or to someone outside their household who can legally own a weapon. And when I read that, I chuckled. I mean, that's dark. That's not going to happen. These are people who are already breaking the law. And they say, now you got to give us a gun. On the honor system? Are you kidding me? The article continues. And they quote an expert on this who said, that's as far as the state police go in the vast majority of cases because they're not funded to do anything more than that. State law does not specify whether any agency in particular is responsible for finding out whether former FOID card holders are still hanging onto their guns. And by the way, that's at least people who are FOID card members or holders, as opposed to people who never even went through that inconvenience. One of the people quoted in this article is a guy named Mark Jones. He's a senior policy advisor at the Illinois Council Against Handgun Violence. He's in our studio. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you, John. It's good to be here.
What's your background?
I'm a 30-year law enforcement veteran. I was a suburban public safety officer in the village of Glencoe for the first 5 years of my career. Often I was called a butler with a gun. Working there.
Nice neighborhood.
It was lovely. I went from there to the Bureau of Diplomatic Security, the United States State Department, where I was a special agent for about 6 years, and then moved on to the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, where I worked for 20 years, retired as the regional firearms advisor for Central America, living in El Salvador, as a supervisory special agent.
What did you think when you heard this Aurora story?
It's sadly common. We are experiencing these around the country, and it seems like in burgeoning numbers over the last couple of years, the numbers of mass shootings seem to be going up. I think the FBI has documented that. It's an awful tragedy.
Are we doing something wrong?
Yeah, I think the bigger culture of firearms in the United States has been allowed to go along. You know, the last real important law that was passed on this topic was 1968, 51 years ago, the Gun Control Act of 1968, which is the current framework for regulating commerce in firearms in the United States and abroad and enforcing those firearms laws. At the state level, which there are 50 states and 50 sets of state firearms laws, it's a patchwork, a quilt, a pastiche.
Is that why somebody convicted in Mississippi, the people in Illinois don't know about it?
It's entirely possible that this gentleman, whose name I will not mention on your show.
Maybe I should.
It's entirely possible, and this is right now speculation, John. The investigation's ongoing, and I don't know what the authorities know. It's possible that he didn't tell the truth when he applied for his firearms owner's ID card, and there's no fingerprint set up to back that up right now.
Do you think we should be more deliberate in the licensing process?
Well, we allow someone to have a firearms purchase card that's good for 10 years without any set of fingerprints. I think that we could tighten that up, make it a lesser number of years, give people an opportunity to find out if they're doing something wrong more quickly, potentially.
So somebody, say, has a right to own a firearm and does. Then they commit a crime for which they should forfeit that right. It sounds like some of that is in play here. Let's just assume for argument's sake that's what happened.
Yes.
What's the mechanism to get the gun away from that person?
As you said, the state police send a letter, and in the letter, they attach a form, and the form is required to be filled out and sent back in with the FOID. Once their firearms owner's ID card has been returned, then they're no longer in legal jeopardy. If they fail to return the form, that's a crime. That's a separate crime. It's a misdemeanor, but it's a separate crime. I'm aware that in 2017, the state police revoked 11,000 firearms owners' ID cards, and 4,000 of those revocations sent in their forms.
I was surprised to see that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's less than 50%, but I'm surprised they got 4,000.
Well,
FOID cards, but what about the guns?
Right. And then there really is the rub. There's no specific responsibility assigned for an agency to go out and recover the firearms from someone.
That's nobody's job?
No one specifically enumerated in the law to go and do that.
Who do you think? Okay, pause and contemplate that. I mean, that's a weak law. Then.
Yeah.
No, well, yeah. A lot of laws are unenforceable. A lot of bills are unfunded. This is something without an operable mechanism. So somebody's got to go get the gun. So say you have lost your right to own a gun. Can a police officer knock on the door and say, give me your gun?
In theory, I think they could. In fact, that's really, I think, the scheme that's currently in place. The state police make a referral to the local jurisdiction listed on the FOID. If that's still operable, let's say, for example, this fellow moved from the address that's on his FOID that's 10 years old. The cops can go knock on that door all they want. They're never going to find him.
That's not an unreasonable search and seizure or something like that. I mean, I thought you can't just go knock on someone's door.
No, you can go and knock on. If you know that, if you've got a reasonable suspicion that they have a gun in the house that they're not supposed to have, you can go and knock on the door to ask them about it. The problem comes in if they say no. Then you're stuck.
What do you mean no?
All right. So as an example, the Cook County Sheriff's Police have an organized program to recover FOID cards from people who've had them revoked. They get notified of revoked in Cook County. They go knock on doors.
They do.
Their gun team tries to get guns back. They take the FOID back, and then they seek to do what I would refer to as a knock and talkers. Basically, they're trying to get into the home and get the guns back. Many times, the people will be compliant. They don't want to be criminals. They hand their stuff over, and the county goes away. But sometimes, the people say, I don't have those guns anymore. And the county is then stymied. The police cannot go in there unless they have a search warrant, and they don't have sufficient, I don't believe, probable cause based on that current information to get a search warrant.
So all the guy's got to do is say, I don't have it, and now the police probably can't cross the threshold of the door.
Correct. That's exactly right.
Okay. Well,
so then they're stuck, right? So they got to get creative. They do the knock and talks. They get some back. A percentage are going to lie and say they don't have the guns any longer. There's the gap. There's what we need legislation to fix. Or perhaps we need regulation to fix it. The state police are empowered to write regulations about things like this. They could regulate this differently. I'm making it sound like this is a simple, like, wave a wand and fix it. It took us 16 years to get the gun dealer certification law through. So
I imagine that there's some constitutional privacy issues that you're treading on here.
Yeah, we've got a thing called the Fourth Amendment that gets in the way of police just going wherever they want to go and taking whatever they want to take.
Yeah,
it's absolutely true. But you know, I think the bigger issue is at the national level, we have firearms laws that appear strong and are very poorly enforced. My alma mater, ATF, is kept weak, hobbled, hamstrung by the very Congress that gives them the mission they're supposed to do. They put appropriations riders on them that don't allow them to spend their money in ways that would be useful and even reasonable for and every other federal agency does.
What's an example of what you're talking about?
A gun dealer goes out of business. They're required to send their records to the Bureau. When the Bureau gets the records, they come in, and I'm literally, John, in tractor trailer loads, show up at the National Tracing Center a couple of weeks full of out-of-business records, boxes, paper records. ATF is then not permitted to digitize those records, but instead is required to microfiche them if they want any kind of ability to search them. But mostly they leave them sitting in boxes and containers around the property where the tracing center is.
Why can't they digitize them?
Because the firearms industry has sold the Congress on the idea that if they digitize the records, it's a de facto registration system, and a de facto registration system will immediately lead to confiscation of the firearms. But from law-abiding gun owners will start to lose their firearms if ATF's allowed to have a computerized database of firearms.
Are you serious?
I'm
that's
as serious
the
as a heart
rationale?
Attack. There's a great video, and when we're finished with this, you give me your email address, I'll send it to you. You watch this video, and you're going to do a show just about this video. I'll guarantee it. It's all about the tracing center and how they can't do their jobs, and it would be comical if it wasn't so serious.
I will post that on my Facebook page if you give me the link after the show.
Absolutely. I've got it on my phone.
I'm off the air in 11 minutes. In our studio is Mark Jones. He's a senior policy advisor at the Illinois Council Against Handgun Violence. I noticed that you're a council against violence, not against handguns. Is that a distinction you make, or are you against guns, too?
You know, John, I've been shooting since I was 9 years old. I've been a competitive shooter. I've carried a gun professionally for more than 30 years. I'm a hunter and a recreational shooter. I am absolutely the industry's worst enemy, because I'm a man who's worked on the inside of the industry. I know how badly they're manipulating our government and the people of the United States.
The NRA?
The NRA is nothing but a mouthpiece for the firearms industry. I'm talking about the industry writ large. American Outdoor Brands, Vista Outdoor, Ruger, Sturm Ruger. These are the big companies in the firearms industry that drive all of the regulation and enforcement of laws. They're the ones that tell ATF what they can and can't do. They do that through the NRA. And look, this makes ATF sound very bad. The men and women at that bureau work diligently. They work their tails off to do the right thing, and they're just hamstrung. And I know I keep using that word, but it's the best word I can think of. They are unable to do their jobs because the Congress has put them in a trick bag if they do their jobs.
Stay right there. Mark Jones is in our studio. Let's take one quick call before we take our break. Bill, you're on WGN Radio. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, he mentioned a minute ago that if the sheriff goes to your house and you confiscate your FOID card and you say you don't have a gun, they can't do anything about it. Then why is it then, if they can't do that about guns, and why is it if you're suspected of selling drugs or something like that, they can bust your door down and come in and search your house?
Thank you for that question. I have to tell you, you're talking about two completely different scenarios here. When the police come to your home to execute a search warrant and make a forced entry, they have the backing of a court. They've had their probable cause statement. They've read it to a judge. The judge has approved it and allowed them to, and actually not even allowed them, ordered them to take those actions to recover the evidence of a crime that's occurring in that home. In the case of a sheriff knocking on the door, he is just basically, he's knocking on the door with a specific purpose in mind to get the FOID back, but he has no legal authority to cross the threshold of your home unless you authorize it.
And I wonder, I love the question and I appreciate the answer. I'm on your side, but I can see the problem that would create. If we said, okay, and we're going to empower the cops to literally kick the door off the hinges and run in looking for a gun, and they don't even live there, or they've legally gotten rid of the gun, or whatever,
right. Or
people are going to go grab the guns and we're just inviting shootouts. I can just see how different or complicated this scenario is.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, you're on WGN Radio. Hi.
Hi, John. One other inherent problem in the FOID card system in Illinois is that a gun is not linked to the FOID card until you go purchase a gun. Just because someone has a FOID card doesn't mean they have a gun. My own children don't own any guns, yet they all have FOID cards.
Mm-hmm.
I have guns, but none of my children do. So if my child is on that list of turning your FOID card, and then they come to their home, they don't have a gun.
What are you hearing here?
I agree completely with the caller. That is an inherent problem, and I don't know that you could necessarily easily tie individual purchases to that specific FOID right now. But we need to tighten these laws up in Illinois and across the country.
You know, it just reminds me a little bit. I'm not in this world. I don't have a FOID card. I don't own a gun. I never have. But for instance, you may be registered. I'm registered to vote out of state. Mm-hmm. And when they look at the voter registration polls, they go, that guy doesn't live here. There's something afoot. And no, there's nothing afoot. I moved and I didn't alert the state. And so the records don't exactly tell you what you think they might. It sounds like FOID is a little bit the case as well.
Oh, absolutely. Look, as I said, it's a 10-year card. A lot of things happen to people in their lives in 10 years, including felony convictions or other things or moves or, you know, so it's even if you knocked on that door, as I said, they may not be there any longer.
First piece of advice you would have for a legislator in Illinois then about this?
Oh, boy, that's a big one. I've been giving legislators advice for the last 2 years and nobody's listened to me till now. But it's actually just that we need to examine what we're doing. And the biggest piece is if we're going to pass laws, we have to resource the agencies properly to enforce the law. The state police have not been given all the tools they need thus far by previous administrations to do this work.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's really I've had meetings in the last week with many, many incoming officials.
Yeah.
And they're all very high on the idea of trying to do this the right way.
Everybody gets religion after one of these shootings. Hopefully they'll maintain their enthusiasm for some sort of sensible reform. Mark Jones from the Illinois Council Against Handgun Violence. Thanks for coming by the studio today.
Thank you for having me here, John.
We will post online the video on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John. We'll post the video you said everybody needs to see about the problem with
the ATF National Tracing Center.
Yeah, and why it's hard to follow the guns and the person.